Off the ball
on News Talk
in association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
But as I say, it is Thursday night, which means we're chatting football with John Giles. John, a very happy Christmas to you. How are things?
I'm good, Owen. Happy Christmas to you and your listeners. A happy new year.
Now, there's really only one place we could start tonight, and it's the news that emerged over the past 24 hours or so that Virgil van Dijk is now the most expensive defender in history. Is he worth that title, John, or are we at the point in football now where transfer fees just don't even matter anymore?
The record shows Liverpool are going to pay $75,000 for him, so that's the record, Owen. Whether he's the best, I wouldn't be too sure about that. But Liverpool do need a defender, as we all know. Whether he's going to be good enough or not remains to be seen. I think he is a very, very good player. I think his defensive qualities could be better. I think he's very good on the ball, Owen. Now, whether Liverpool... I just find it difficult with Liverpool that some of the things that the players actually do under Klopp, I think they're either told to do it, or if they're not doing it properly, it hasn't been spotted. What I'd be a little bit worried about Liverpool, when Van Dijk goes, would Klopp have him playing in positions, in dead ball positions and that, that wouldn't be correct? For example, I saw Liverpool, one of the worst players was against Spurs a few weeks ago when they were well beaten. And for the first goal, I think it was a free kick initially, and they were very, very badly lined up for the free kick. Now, that had to come from the coaches, whether it be Klopp or his defensive coaches. I would assume that it's Klopp that did it. Now, if Van Dijk was playing that day, he would have been in a bad position as well. In other words, Van Dijk, in my estimation, could be badly coached when it comes to defending. That would be my fear for Liverpool.
So you feel, from Klopp's perspective, it's more of a systemic failure in the defence rather than a personnel one?
Definitely. I think I've done this before on the programme. You take Moreno, for example, who is a left-back, Owen. Now, there's lots of times when the ball's on the other side of the field, he gets too far in on the central defenders. He should be halfway between the central defenders and the winger on the right-hand side. He doesn't do that. He's too far in. Now, I've seen him do that quite a lot, and it's never been put right. So he's either told to do that, right, and which is wrong, or he does it on his own but hasn't been stopped doing it, which is also wrong. So, defending properly, like that should be, I think, the coach should be able to see that after the first match that he ever played in, to say, no, you get halfway between the winger and the central defenders. Now, I'm getting a bit technical here. But he's in beside the centre, and that happens time after time after time, which means he's being badly coached, or the fault hasn't been seen. Now, what I would worry about a little bit with Van Dijk when he comes in, is he going to be told to be into bad positions?
The thing with it as well, though, John, is that he was clearly plan A for Klopp, and Klopp didn't have a plan B. He was stubborn, and he waited the 6 months, or he waited till the next transfer window to finally get his man. What is it about him that makes him so essential in Klopp's eyes?
Well, obviously, I don't mind that, Owen, because he obviously believes he's the man that can solve their defensive errors, or part of their errors anyway. I don't mind him. I would wait a few months if I thought he was the right man to get him. Now, obviously, Klopp believes that. But what I'm saying is, when he does go in, and I have my doubts whether he will be properly used with the qualities that Van Dijk has as a natural defender himself. I just see other defenders, in my opinion, badly coached from defensive positions with Klopp in charge of it. Now, whether the new personnel, anybody brings in, is going to change that, I don't know. I just have my doubts about it. I think Van Dijk is, without question, better than the central defenders he has at the moment. Now, whether he's going to be coached in the right way, or what Klopp wants when he gets there is going to be the correct way, I have my doubts.
Do you think Virgil van Dijk, in his own personal career graph, might have preferred to go to Manchester City? I know Guardiola has said this week that they deny ever making a bid for Van Dijk or being interested in him. Do you think Van Dijk deep down was hoping he would get the tutelage of Pep Guardiola?
Well, we don't know. We don't know that. And I think, like, if I was looking from the outside now, which I'm looking at, and Van Dijk had a choice to go to Manchester City or Liverpool, I think, like most players, I believe, would go to Manchester City. Because they're doing what they're doing, they're the top team, they're good, you know, they're 15 points ahead in the league and all the various things. Let's put it this way, when I was at my best and I had a choice between to go to Manchester City and Liverpool at the moment, I would definitely go to Manchester City. But, I mean, I can't speak for Van Dijk, that's his choice. But I think if Manchester City had really wanted Van Dijk, I think they would have put a bid in that would have... But would have been, if it came to the finances, would have been a bigger bid than Liverpool's.
Do you think there's an element as well of not wanting to disrupt the harmony that's already going on at Manchester City?
Oh, I wouldn't worry about that. There's never such a harmony, in my experience in football, Owen, that what the manager considers to be an improvement to the team would disturb. That's what happens in the team. If you go back to Liverpool, you mentioned them early on, Owen. You know, when they were winning leagues year after year after year, if you go back on that, they nearly always, when they won, whatever they won, signed two top-class players the following season. And that was a continuous thing. Because they want to bring new blood in, they could afford it. And you can never improve the team too much. So they would, Liverpool... And the manager has to be ruthless regardless of what the players did from the previous season. If he honestly believes that bringing a player in or two players in, and don't forget, Liverpool at the best times could bring the two of the best players in, which would obviously improve the team. That's the way it worked. I mean, Alex Ferguson did it at Manchester United over the years. That's the way it works. So there'll be no problem for them from Guardiola's point of view, if he could get two players in, he would bring them in.
Speaking of buying defenders for the price of strikers, Jose Mourinho has been in the press yet again this week. Have you ever seen a manager deflect as much as Jose Mourinho has, John? Like this time he's saying that they can't afford to compete with Manchester City.
Well, I don't know. I think everybody's getting fed up with Mourinho, myself included, Owen. I mean, what he's saying at the moment is that it's money that's made Manchester City where they are, whereas he didn't spend as much money as Manchester City, which is total nonsense. I mean, looking at the papers yesterday, there's not that much between what Manchester City spent and what he spent. And he's saying, well, Manchester City can afford to buy fullbacks for the price of strikers. Well, that's none of his business. It's not how much money you spend on, it's how you spend it is the big thing. And Mourinho has spent an awful lot of money. And what he's saying is, I want another 300 million more to compete with Manchester City. But he's making a money matter. Don't forget, Guardiola and Mourinho came to Manchester City and Manchester United at the same time. Now, the fact is, looking back over the last two seasons, so far, Guardiola has done a much bigger job than Mourinho. There's no doubt about that. That's what it shows. And I think Mourinho can't take it. Now, there's another thing in spending the money. Conte came to Chelsea at the same time as Guardiola and Mourinho. And look what he did last year. He didn't spend as much money as Manchester City, but he did the job. And he's doing a very, very good job this year without spending anywhere near the money that Mourinho spent. So I think it's the fact that Mourinho just can't take the fact that Guardiola is doing much better than he does. And he's saying he wants more money. And he's turning on the players a little bit again. He's saying they were foolish goals the other night. They didn't do this and they didn't do that. And he's over the years, he's always been inclined, to blame the players. And this is what happened to Chelsea. And if he continues to do this at Manchester United, I think he will lose the players there as well, Owen.
Yeah, it's a strange one because you listen to his post-match comments the other night and it's almost as if he's resigned to the fact that this is the most that this Manchester United team can give. That's surely not the case, is it?
No, I mean, he's the manager and he's also making the case, again, I just repeat myself, that because Guardiola spent more money, that he's not doing as well as he should be because he hasn't spent as much money. But that's just not the case. I mean, he spent... Guardiola has spent a bit more, and put into terms of spending money, Mourinho himself has spent an awful lot of money. I mean, they spent, whether he spent it or not, 90 million on Pogba. Well, this is at a time when Kante was available for 30 odd million. So, you know, you've got to pick the right players and how you're spending the money on. Mm. And, you know, he has spent a lot of money since he's been at Manchester United, much more than Conte did at Chelsea, and only fairly slightly less than Guardiola spent at Manchester City. It's not a question of money, I don't think, or what he spent or how much he spent. It's how he spent it.
Yeah, and I think when you mentioned Conte there, one of the great examples from their Premier League winning season is Victor Moses and how Conte managed to turn him into what seemed like a world-class wing-back. Look at what Pep Guardiola has done this season with Fabian Delph after the injury to Benjamin Mendy.
Exactly, Conte. I mean, Conte is up against it because Matic was sold without his say-so in the start of the season, and they haven't spent an awful lot of money at all, Chelsea. And when he went there last year, Conte had to do what he did with the players that was at his disposal. And if you go back towards the end of last season, when Manchester United won the Europa Cup and the League Cup, there was nothing sure that Mourinho made everybody aware that he'd won two trophies. In fact, he said three trophies because he included the Charity Shield in it. So he won two trophies with the players that he had last season, and he spent a bit more money in the summer. So, you know, he just can't take it. And that Guardiola is doing better than he's doing.
That's the thing, because it's probably the first time in Jose Mourinho's career when he's been given a rebuilding job, and for the first time there's no guarantee of success here because Manchester City just look too bloody good.
Yeah, well, don't forget, Conte, Guardiola and Mourinho started at the same time. That has to be recognised, Owen. And the fact is that Conte did brilliantly last year winning the league. He hasn't been able to spend anywhere near the amount of money that Mourinho has spent. And Guardiola started at the same time. Now, there's no doubt everybody would agree that Mourinho has fallen way behind Guardiola in what they've done since they've gone to the clubs. And it's not a question of that Manchester City has spent more money. They probably spent it maybe more wisely than Mourinho has done, or it's down to good management. But for whatever reason, Mourinho has fallen way behind Guardiola.
We often talk about the graph that often comes up with Jose Mourinho, as in his second season, he usually wins the league title, and then the third or fourth season, things start to go wrong. Has the third or fourth season just been bumped up to the second season, John, where things are starting to unravel for Jose?
Well, it could well be, Owen, because the comments he's making about the players, that they were foolish and they didn't do this and they didn't do that, and it could get to the stage where, you know, the players have enough of that. Players don't like being criticised publicly by their manager. We saw that at Chelsea when there was a couple of years ago when he was sacked there and he turned on the doctor and all the various things. It's not a good sign when a manager is making bad remarks about the players. Mm. And it never works. In my experience, it never works. And I think that's beginning to happen with Mourinho, with the players. You know, he's saying last week, oh, they defended terrible, they were naive, they were this, they were that and the other. You know, he's in charge of the players. He takes the credit when they're doing well, and you've got to take the blame when they're not doing well. But that doesn't happen with Mourinho.
We'll park that just for a moment, because it'd be amiss of me not to ask you about Harry Kane. It's been the record that everybody's been talking about all week, albeit a calendar year record. It's a bit of a strange one to be measuring footballing records in calendar years. What's your initial reaction to that, actually, John, the whole measuring of things over a 12-month period rather than across a season?
Well, it's part, I think, now of the press and the television. They like to see records being beaten, which is fair enough on. My only objection to it would be that these records that we're talking about only started from 1992. And that's what happened with the Premiership and Sky Television. They created a new game altogether. So there was no history involved in it. Again, now in my time, Jimmy Greaves, during one of the calendar years, actually scored 50-odd goals. Right, which is 25 goals ahead of what Harry Kane did, but it's only in Harry Kane's record stands ahead of Alan Shearer's from 1992, And I think that's bad. I think it shows a lack of respect for the game, for the history of the game. And I don't want to be an old-timer talking. Good luck to Harry Kane. I think he's a terrific lad and deserves everything he gets from the game. But that record that you're talking about is from 1992. Well, there was 100 years of history in the game before 1992, which has totally been wiped out. And again, Jimmy Greaves did that, holds that record, or held that record, up to the records being changed in 92. Now, Jimmy Greaves did it in 61, 62, or 62, 63, I think. But it was 50-odd goals, on.
Yeah.
I mean, Harry Kane is great. I think he's a smashing lad. I think he's going to be a great player. And good luck to him for what he did. But, the if you're looking at records, you should be looking at what happened in, the Football League over the years. You can't have a past. You can't have a present without the past. And I don't think records should be written out to suit the Premier League and Sky Television. And good luck to Harry Kane in what he's done, and I hope he gets better and better. I think he's a terrific lad.
Yeah, it seems to be commonplace at this point, doesn't it, that football started in 1992. Like, you think about the Jamie Vardy run, Jimmy Dunn was ignored for that.
Exactly, Owen. It happened last year. In fact, if you go back a further time, this is going back a long time, to the 30s, a fellow called Dixie Dean. I mean, these things happened, I know they're a long time ago, but Dixie Dean actually scored 60 goals for his club in one season. But over the period of a calendar year, he scored about 50-odd goals as well. And I think Jimmy Greaves beat that record in his time.
Yeah,
The record shouldn't be from a certain time. It should be from when it started. Oh.
59 goals in 1962 was Jimmy Greaves' record there. It was unbelievable stuff. But like, what I find remarkable about this is that the man who seems to care most about the Jimmy Greaves era is Harry Kane himself. He seems to have a huge amount of admiration for Greaves. Greaves went to White Hart Lane to meet him a couple of weeks ago.
Of course he would. Owen, people like Harry Kane would have their heroes. I go back to my time, I'm a lot older than Harry Kane. I had my heroes when I was a kid. I wanted to emulate those heroes. I was very lucky. I played in the Manchester United Cup winning team in 1963. And that was the first time Manchester United won the Cup since 1948. Now, in 1948, Jackie Carey and Johnny Aston and the players that played were my heroes. And one of the biggest thrills of my life was meeting those players who were invited to the Cup banquet in 1963. Jack Rowley, Charlie Mitten, I could name them for you. People wouldn't remember them. They're terrific, terrific players. They were my heroes. And I was delighted to meet them after because they inspired me when I was a kid. Mm. Harry Kane would be inspired by Jimmy Greaves because his father would be a Spurs supporter. Harry Kane wouldn't have seen Jimmy Greaves play live anyway. He would know his record, but he would know it through his father. And I'd say one of the biggest joys in Harry Kane's life was beating the record that he's beaten now, but also meeting Jimmy Greaves, who had done it before him. That's how players become players. They want to emulate the people that went before them. They're heroes. And that's why I saw a photograph recently where Jimmy Greaves is not very well. Mm. He had a stroke there a few years ago. Harry Kane was talking to him, obviously a photograph of him, where Jimmy Greaves was a hero of his and loved to meet him. That's how you get the Harry Kanes of this world, emulating the people that went before them. And that's why it annoys me when the likes of the 1992, the Premier League started and Sky started, that the likes of Jimmy Greaves' record is not even recognised. And I think that's wrong. Harry Kane would recognise it and would love it and would love meeting Jimmy Greaves, because that's what players do. They're one of the biggest heroes. They want to emulate their heroes. And Harry Kane is a lovely lad, and good luck to him beating the record that he beat.
At what point does Harry Kane start prioritising trophies in his career? Because I'd say at this point he's fairly content that he's going to continue to develop under Maurizio Pochettino, but give it 12, 18 months down the line, John, and I would suspect Harry Kane is starting to look for the big trophies rather than individual accolades.
Well, he can only do what he can do. I think any time I hear Harry Kane, he loves Tottenham. Mm. Owen. It doesn't. From what I hear of him, he doesn't want to play anywhere else. And on the financial side, he's not been treated very well. Apparently, Harry Kane is on 100 grand a week, which is a lot of money. But in my opinion, he should be on 300 grand a week. But he doesn't seem to care about the money. He wants to do for Tottenham what he's doing. And that's, again, part of being brought up. His father was a Tottenham supporter, and the tradition of the club. And that's what he wants to do. Now, I heard Thierry Henry making a stupid remark the other day, in my opinion, a stupid remark anyway, that he has to win trophies, you know, to prove that he's a great player. Well, that's nonsense. You know, I mean, if he's doing, he can only do what he's doing at Tottenham, hope that they will win trophies. But it doesn't stop him being given the credit for the player he is and the records that he's creating, which is brilliant. And you go back to Alan Shearer, well, who was a terrific player as well. Alan Shearer only won one trophy with Blackburn in the league, but he was definitely the leading striker in England for 10 years. So you don't have to be winning. I mean, it is better to be winning trophies, but there's a lot of ordinary players who won a lot of trophies, Owen, and were never great players. So I think if Harry Kane stays at Spurs for the rest of his career and creates all the records that he's creating at the moment, he'll definitely be recognised as a great player. He doesn't have to be winning trophies. Winning trophies is part of the game that you love to do. But there's been a lot of great players over the years, really great players. I'm talking about the Premiership now and before, who didn't win trophies.
Listen, just before we wrap up, John, I just wanted to ask you very quickly about the Steven Gerrard quotes in the papers this week. It wasn't particularly barnstorming news or anything like that. I just thought it was quite poignant that he pointed out that he really misses playing football when it comes to Christmas time because the games come so thick and so fast around this time of year. Was that something you found as well once you left football, that you almost missed the ferocity of those games at that time?
Well, I certainly enjoyed when I was doing it, Owen. Mm. In those days, you had 3 games in 4 days over the Christmas period. But I used to really, really enjoy it. And sometimes, as a stranger may seem, I felt better after the third game than the first game. So it's all a state of mind. But it is the holiday period. There was huge crowds at the games. There was a lot of anticipation. So I actually enjoyed it. I never saw it as a burden because we had to play 3 games in 4 days. But I think what Gerrard was saying, that he actually misses it now. I think he probably misses playing because he only finished fairly recently on. Mm. So he would miss the holiday period where he had to do what he had to do at the Christmas. It was always a great atmosphere. I always felt it was a great atmosphere around the grounds at around Christmas time.
Did Don Revy have you training on Christmas Day?
Yeah. He did us a big favour. He used to let us have Christmas dinner at home on.
Right, okay.
And then we'd be in at 5 o'clock for training. And away then afterwards for whatever it was, the 3 days or 4 days, we had to do it. But that was part of it. But I think I certainly enjoyed it. I think most of the players that I was with at Leeds at that time particularly enjoyed it.
Just finally, before we let you go, John, just one quick text in on the Van Dijk thing. There's an anonymous listener wondering, how does Liverpool's approach to the Coutinho situation now change if Van Dijk manages to help that dramatic turnaround at the back? They could almost think about closing the gap on City next season if they keep Coutinho. Do you agree with that?
I think so. I think they've done well, actually. I doubted Liverpool's response to Coutinho at the start of the season, Owen. I thought they would sell him. I honestly thought they would sell him. I thought they would take the money. They didn't. And now they've gone for Van Dijk. I would be amazed if they would sell Coutinho, which has proven them actually to prove. I thought, well, the Coutinho thing was a test. Are they a big club or not not a big club? And they passed that test. And I think they'll pass the test again, laying out the money for Van Dijk. I think they won't let Coutinho go.
Yeah, well, it's going to be very interesting to see how that one develops. John, thanks a million.
Thanks, Owen.
John Giles there. He's with us every Thursday here on Off the Ball on News Talk. Make sure to subscribe to the Football with John Giles podcast for more for him. We're going to take a quick break and we're turning to racing when we're back.
Off the Ball on News Talk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.